This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. This is Natural Lee with your news headlines. Heather Smith from Grist.org writes, in 2007, after a tornado wiped out the farm town of Greensburg, the city was rebuilt with solar panels and wind turbines. The whole setup produces enough power for the entire city and a few neighborhood municipalities. In 2009, Kansas passed a Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard, RPS, which mandates that local utilities get 20% of their power generation capacity from renewables by 2020 in four-year stages with a 5% increase per stage. The standard caught the attention of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, a conservative think tank with close ties to the oil and gas industry that is opposed to just about everything to do with alternative energy. ALEC seems to have a particular vendetta against RPS regulations across the country. About 30 states have them. And in 2012, ALEC wrote up a model RPS repeal bill that began to show up in state legislatures across the country, including Kansas. Senator Rob Olson, a Republican from Olathe, attempted to kill the standards in 2013 but failed. And Kansas is ahead of schedule on its RPS goals. Another effort to repeal the RPS appeared March 20th when the Kansas Senate Utilities Committee voted to repeal the RPS, and once again the State House shot down the repeal effort. So Kansas has another year of wind power standards. If anything, the story of Kansas and wind power is a story of how environmental goals, once accomplished, need to be affirmed over and over again, which, at least for now, they have. BP's newly upgraded refinery just spilled oil in Chicago's water source. Less than a year after BP upgraded its Whiting refinery in northwestern Indiana to allow it to handle heavy Canadian tar sands oil, causing petroleum coke to begin piling up in nearby Chicago, an industrial accident at the refinery has spewed some of that oil into Lake Michigan. The Chicago Tribune reports that it's not known how long the refinery was leaking out or how much oil was spilled. The leak was reported at 4:30 p.m. and plugged by 9 p.m. when an EPA official arrived at the scene. The spill came at an ominous time, as just 3 weeks prior, BP announced a plan to nearly double its processing of heavy crude oil at their BP Whiting refinery. Climate change causing salamanders to shrink, leaving them vulnerable to predators and extinction. Wild salamanders living in some of North America's best salamander habitat are getting smaller as their surroundings get warmer and drier, forcing them to burn more energy in a changing climate. That's the key finding of a new study published today in the journal Global Change Biology that examined museum specimens caught in the Appalachian Mountains from 1957 to 2007 and wild salamanders measured at the same sites in 2011 and 2012. The salamanders studied from 1980 onward were on average 8% smaller than their counterparts from earlier decades. The changes were most marked in the southern Appalachians and at low elevations, settings where detailed weather records showed the climate has warmed and dried out most. Scientists have predicted that some animals will get smaller in response to climate change, and this is strong confirmation of that prediction. We don't know if this is a genetic change or a sign that the animals are flexible enough to adjust to new conditions, or if these animals are adjusting, but it gives us some hope that species are going to be able to keep up with climate change. The study was prompted by the work of University of Maryland Professor Heighton, who began collecting salamanders in the Appalachian Mountains in 1957. The geologically ancient mountain range's moist forests and long evolutionary history make it a global hotspot for a variety of salamander species. Heighton collected hundreds of thousands of salamanders now preserved in jars at Smithsonian's institutions. Today we have two guests with us. Craig Lubo will be interviewing Ms. Catherine Kelly from Cultivate KC, and they will be discussing sustainable farms in KC and upcoming events. And our second guest will be Delaney Ellis, and she'll be joining us via telephone. Delaney is the producer and director of Battlefields to Farm Fields, a documentary that will be shown at the KC Film Festival on April 10th. It's about veterans from the Iraq War finding careers with sustainable farming. And before we get started, I would like to say happy birthday to my mother, Mrs. Carol Bopp. I love you, Mom, and I hope you have a great birthday.
Okay, this is Craig Lubo, and I have Catherine Kelly here with me. She's the executive director of Cultivate KC, Catherine, can you tell us what Cultivate KC is?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Craig. Cultivate Kansas City is a grassroots organization that was started, we're actually going into our 10th year, so started in 2005. And what we do is we work to promote food, farms, and community in the metro area. We work with farmers across the metro area to help them start, run, grow their farm, urban farm businesses. We have our own farm, a certified organic vegetable farm called Gibbs Road Farm. And then we have a program that's a collaboration with Catholic Charities where we are working with refugees from around the world who have come to Kansas City bringing their agricultural skills with us. We help them start their own independent farm businesses.
Okay. And you mentioned organic, that Gibbs Farm is organic. Now, the other farmers you work with, are they all organic farmers as well?
So Gibbs Road Farm is certified organic. With the refugee growers, we are teaching them organic methods for farming. So they, while they're not certified, they are organic in their practices and are compliant with organic standards. And then across the metro area, we work with folks who use all kinds of practices in their field. In general, I would say that most urban farmers tend to be organic in their practices, but there are, you know, there's a variety of folks, and they are all working to grow good food for Kansas City residents.
Okay. And on your website, you also have item as forest, farm forest. What is
food,
that?
Food forest.
What is that referring to?
We have a quarter acre site that is a mix of trees, of bushes, of perennials, and of annuals that are interplanted in such a way that they will, over time as they become established, become an independently self-sustaining system. So there are legume fixers, trees, and I think some bushes as well, and certainly some grasses or clovers that fix nitrogen. When those plants die, the nitrogen becomes available to other plants so that you don't have to rely on importing fertilizers. The tall trees shade some of the shorter trees and bushes that do better under shade. So it's a system that's totally integrated and that over time will produce a lot of food from a relatively small footprint.
Is this the same concept that I believe another organization, Sustainable Action Network,
yes,
does? I think they call it something else.
Well, it's permaculture.
It's
permaculture.
Okay.
Yep.
Right.
And they have a number of their leaders have been involved in both the design and development of the garden, and we continue to be in relationship with them.
Okay. And before we go on with the questions, we will be taking telephone calls from listeners with questions or comments. And if you would like to call in, the number at the studio is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Okay. There's another farm that I've heard of, Juniper Gardens Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And is that part of your?
Yep. That's the program where we work with refugees. It's a partnership with Catholic Charities, and it's also a partnership with the community housing. Wow, I just drew a blank on the Housing Authority. There we go, the Housing Authority of KCK. It's a 9-acre farm that is right in downtown KCK. It's about 5 minutes from both downtown KCMO and downtown KCK. And it is a training farm where we have 17 quarter-acre plots for refugee farmers who are in our four-year program. We also have right now about a quarter acre of community gardens on site and maybe another quarter acre of research and demonstration sites. The farm is also the center for several refugee community gardens that are out in the community and a farmer's market we do on site in partnership with KCK Green Market, which happens every Monday morning.
And which farmer's market are you referring to?
It's called the KCK Green Market at Juniper Gardens.
Okay.
And it's Monday morning, and it will start in May. I don't know the exact date, but if people are interested, it's a fun market. It's the refugee growers, so there's all kinds of interesting vegetables, and you can find out information about it at our website.
Okay. And what is your website?
CultivateKC.org.
Okay. And the training program you said is 4 years. At the end of that program, did people get a certification or some kind of a diploma or what?
So the program is designed for refugees who come here with agricultural experience. So they're people who have done subsistence farming in their own country, who have grown at a larger scale. Some of them have grown at the 10-acre, 15-acre scale. And they've come here, and because of language barriers, because of a lack of formal education, they may be facing more barriers to traditional employment paths. And they are also people who are interested in running their own farm business. They want that kind. They liked farming. They loved farming. They want to be operating their own place. And so they come into the program after having been a community gardener for at least a year. And they get training. They get support. They go through, in the first year, 18 hour-and-a-half-long workshops that are interpreted right now into three different languages. Once they complete those trainings, they sign a lease with us on a quarter-acre plot. Catholic Charities works with them to decide which farmer's market to go to. And then over the course of the year, as they sell their produce, they bank a certain amount of it to first start up for the next year, and they start picking up some of their own expenses. Year two, they start paying for their own seeds, some of their own supplies. They keep selling. They keep putting money in the bank. But by the time they graduate, after their fourth year, they have both money in the bank, an established customer base, and the basic know-how on how to run their own farm business here in the United States. During that time period, we start talking to them about what kind of land they would like after they graduate. Are they looking for, are they saving money to buy a home as well? Catholic Charities, Rachel Pollack, who is the staff person there, has a lot of knowledge and sort of interest in helping people buy homes and land, and so we have several of the graduates have actually bought their own homes and land in town and are now operating their own, like, 2-acre farm with a home attached. So we help them figure out how to transition off to a fuller level of independence.
And you mentioned the program has 18 workshops. What are some of the workshops?
You know, we pretty much go from seed to plate. So we talk about soils management using organic practices. We talk about water resource management. We spend a lot of time on the production schedule, on when you can plant what crops. Since a lot of them came from countries where there was a very different growing season, we talk about marketing and the marketing options that are available to them. This year, we're adding information about selling on the wholesale market, since we've got some growers who are interested in producing at a slightly larger scale and who might be, with some support and development, might be interested in selling at a larger scale to schools, to grocery stores, to restaurants. We also we're doing workshops on financial management, so things like keeping track of your receipts, tracking what your income is, sales tax, and we're really trying this year particularly to emphasize getting a hold of the economics of your farm business. So it really runs the full gamut. What we've seen is that the growers who come out of there are really excellent growers, growing good quality produce, managing their fields real well, and they are good sellers. And so for some of the families, the income off of their farm can be as much as 50% of their household income.
Yeah, you also mentioned you offered the workshops in three languages.
Mm-hmm.
What are the three languages?
Right now we have two Burmese ethnic languages, and then Bhutanese Nepali are there.
Is that where most of your refugees come from?
Over the last couple of years, we started out mostly with Somali Bantu, and as the refugee population, it kind of shifts depending on what's going on globally. And so we've seen more Burmese coming in, and then Bhutanese, Nepali coming in as well. And so most of them right now are, we've got Burmese Chin, Burmese Karen, Burmese Kareni, ethnic Burmese. So we've got four different ethnic groups from Burma, and then the Bhutanese Nepali.
Okay. And if somebody, if a refugee came from a different country, mm-hmm. is there a way that they can be accommodated with their language
yep.
as well?
Yep, we have funding to pay for interpretation, and we are committed to, you know, we're giving really good quality trainings. We're giving professional level trainings, and it's important that they be able to understand and grasp that information how, you know, in the best way they can. So our workshops both emphasize language that's interpreted. It also, we use a lot of pictures. We try and make our workshops real tactile.
Okay. And again, I want to remind our listeners, we are taking phone calls. If you have any questions or comments, the number in the studio is 816-931-5534. Okay. Another organization I think most people have heard of in Kansas is Food Circle.
Yes.
What is the difference between what you do and what Food Circle does?
We are very much partners and complements to each other. The Food Circle, when I first, I moved back here from living in Boston back in 95, and when I first came back to the Midwest, they were the first or second food organization I connected with. And the other one was Casey Community Gardens, and the Food Circle has been, just for me as an individual, tremendously important. Back before I started Cultivate Kansas City, I ran my own farm, Full Circle Farm, and they were a tremendously important organization in terms of reaching out to customers, connecting with other farmers, making sense of what was happening here around local and organic food. Today, we are involved with a couple of initiatives with the Food Circle, one of them being the Growing Growers Program. We're on the advisory committee and the committee that kind of steers that program. We work with them on projects like they're helping us to bring Vandana Shiva in a couple weeks, and we'll be talking about that about more later. We just were at the Farmers Expo this Saturday. We'll be at the next expo Saturday after next. And, you know, they're very much, in general, I would say their focus is on connecting consumers to farmers, and our focus is more strongly on growing the farmers and for the consumers to connect to.
All right. And we are ready for our first break, and we will be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Sheila Himmel.
I'm Fran Smith. We're authors of Changing the Way We Die. Next time on New Dimensions, we'll be talking about compassionate end-of-life care.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
On Tuesdays at 6 p.m., the newly revised Radioactive Magazine show will join forces with Mic Check to bring you the latest happenings from such diverse community activist groups as Occupy KC, Move to Amend, MoveOn.org, Whole Persons, Kansas City Freethinkers, and many more. Find out who's doing what in our community to improve the world we live in. That's Mondays at 6 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay, we are back, and again we are with Catherine Kelly, and she is the Executive Director of Cultivate KC. Thank you for being here again.
I'm glad to be here.
You're also involved in CSAs. Can mm-hmm. you tell us what those are?
Sure. CSAs are a model for people to get, you know, locally grown food that is basically a partnership between the consumer and the farmer. So if you were interested in being a member, you would research, talk to, connect with a local farm. You would pay your membership share normally in advance of the growing season, so you are literally and figuratively providing seed money to get the farm going that year. And then when the crops start coming in, you would get a bag of vegetables that's generally the farmer's pick through some specified period. So, for example, our farm this year, we are going to be offering three sessions, a spring session, a summer session, and a fall session. People pay in advance, and then every week our farmer, Alicia Ellingsworth, puts together a bag of 5 to 7 vegetables, and people either come and pick them up or else we deliver to their houses. There's a growing number of CSAs across the metro area. It's a model that is really wonderful because it connects you to a specific farm, a specific place, a specific farmer, and over time you get to know them, you get to work with them, you go through the highs, the lows of farming. You can remember the year where we had drought and heat for weeks on weeks on end, and your bags went down. You remember the other years where there was abundance maybe of summer squash, and so it's a way to really connect you to the environment that you live in and how it interacts with our ability to produce food.
And so if it's kind of connecting you to individual farmers, mm-hmm. like that, do all the farmers pretty much grow the same foods, or are they all different?
You know, it will vary. Generally, people sign up for a CSA because they want, you know, the basic vegetables that you eat every week. So you know, pretty much every CSA, you know that they're going to grow tomatoes and peppers and potatoes and probably beans. You know, so a lot of them will also grow corn and squashes and, herbs or another, lettuces, spinach. CSAs, farmers have, and their farms have different, specialties or interests. So, like, our farm, we really like growing greens, baby greens, microgreens, experimenting with new herbs. We bring in new crops. So, for example, we grow sweet potato greens. So you can harvest the leaves off sweet potatoes and cook them up like any other grain. Other farms will have, you know, their soil may like to grow root crops, and so they will have a stronger offering of carrots and turnips. Another farm may be really have a climate that's really good for brassicas, so broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, and so that CSA may get more of that. So what you're getting is very much an expression of the soil, the microclimate, as well as the farmer.
And when somebody wants to go sign up for a CSA, is there a website that they can look at that's going to tell them what each of the CSAs, what they each grow, so they can distinguish?
You know, I would recommend, if you're interested in a CSA, that you go to kcfoodcircle.org. They have a directory of local farmers and a listing, and in their directory you'll find who does CSAs. This is, if you're interested in a CSA, you need to get on, out there and calling farmers or emailing farmers to find out who has CSA shares available, because they sell out pretty quickly.
Okay. And again, the website for that was KC Food Circle.
I hope I've got that right. I think it's kcfoodcircle.org.
Okay.
And if it's not exactly right, just do a search on Kansas City Food Circle and it will pop up.
All right. Coming up later this month, it's next month still, on April 17th, you have a guest coming in to speak. Who is that?
We are really pleased to be bringing Vandana Shiva she's going to give a lecture. She's going to be at a couple of different events. Dr. Shiva is a physicist, an author, a thinker, an activist, a mover, a shaker. She is an amazing woman from India who has really been out and talking about food issues, food sovereignty, food democracy for decades. She's somebody who has been out there and who has really shaped our conversation about local food, about global agriculture, about GMOs, about owning our food system and making deliberate choices about it.
Okay. And farmers involved in this, mm-hmm. they're all individual. None of them are employed or working for None of them are corporate owned, I guess is what I'm
saying. Which farmers are you talking
about? Well, the farmers are the three-year program.
Oh, okay. So, yes. So we operate our own farm, and then at Juniper, all of those farmers are they're independently operated. So they own their own farm business. They have their own tax ID number. And when we work with farmers across the metro area, they are also independent farm businesses, or in some cases, they are farms that are run coordinated by a nonprofit.
And when somebody goes to one of the farmer markets, how do they know or how can they verify that what they're buying is in fact organic?
Look for certified organic there's a little insignia that the farmer will often have. If they're certified organic, you know that they've been visited by a third party, a trained certifier. They've had to submit, crop management plans, soil building plans, a list of what, amendments they may use, a list of what pest controls they may use. So you've got a level of verification that, in fact, they're using organic practices. A lot of farmers choose not to get certified. It can be expensive, though there's now a cost share program where the federal government will actually help pick up the cost of the inspection and certification. It's also very, you have to keep a lot of records, so it's very time intensive. And so some farmers choose not to do that. Some of them will become certified naturally grown, which is a peer certification effort that in a lot of ways mirrors the standards that are set by the NOPA, the National Organic Program. Other farmers will use organic practices but won't get certified, by any outside group. If you don't have that certification, what you should do is talk to the farmer, ask them what their practices are, start up a conversation with them, and get to know them over time.
Okay. And I believe we have a caller on the air. Caller, can we have your first name and what part of the city you're calling from?
Yes, it's a blind guy from the Villa Incognito here in Midtown. Fascinating subject, yeah. And the best way you can tell it's organic is basically by taste. You know it when you know it. But I've tried to get this radio station for years, and it would help the farmers. It would help our community. On the days of, like, every organic market happening, let's say on Wednesday, there's one over on Westport Road from 5 to 8 p.m., so it's convenient for people getting off work and that people might know there's an organic market a few blocks away from them, but they don't know it. So if the station would communicate that, plus it helps the farmers, the more the gas is getting expensive and that stuff, and the more they bring in and the more they sell, they can start making a living, and people would be happier, and they'll be healthier, and they'd be able to give more money to the station because it's cheaper to eat organically. Hey, peace out.
Okay, thank you, caller. Do you have any comments about that, Catherine?
There are, at last count, I want to say we had 50 farmers markets in the KC metro area, not all of them organic. We are focusing on organic practices. There are, I want to say, 8 farmers markets in town that are that set standards that are similar to the KC Food Circle. And whatever organization, whatever Facebook page, whatever options there are for promoting those markets, it is needed and much appreciated because most of them are farmer-run, and you can imagine what that looks like in August when everything is crazy busy and there's nothing but work to be done.
Okay. And when we talk about sustainability, of course, and he kind of alluded to that, a major factor is transportation.
Yep.
And when you're dealing with the food that's brought into the grocery stores, what's the impact that all that transportation has on other environmental issues?
Well, you'll hear a lot that most food travels from field to plate over, I think, 1,400 miles. And so there's a lot of gas mileage involved in that. The easy answer is, well, if you buy locally, there's less mileage attached to that produce. And that's not the reality is a little more complicated because of the way when a semi is driving across the country carrying a load of produce, it's carrying a lot of produce. And so It is the miles per pound of produce is more complicated just because of the volume. Importantly, I think it's also you also want to pay attention to the fact that locally grown produce was harvested generally the day you buy it, the day before you buy it, you know, the day, you know, a couple days before. And so it's produce that's picked closer to its peak. It's picked, it's grown in the environment that you live in, and so it reflects your own microclimate. And I think in general the quality is better because it is picked fresh.
Okay. And in fact, some of it, if it's coming from overseas, like South America, bananas might be picked a couple months before it.
Yeah, I can't
speak
to bananas, but I know I did once go into a grocery store, back when I started early on, and I was figuring out what my best marketing channels were going to be, and I had a conversation with a produce manager who pointed at a baby salad mix that was in the cooler there, and he told me that he bought it in 1,000-pound lots and that he sold that 1,000 pounds pretty much by the end of 3 weeks, and which means that somebody at the end of that 3 week period was getting produce that was probably four and a half, five weeks old.
Okay. And a lot of people are concerned about GMOs, which is mm-hmm. genetically modified crops.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers that you work with, if it's organic, does that eliminate the GMOs?
Yep. As an organic farmer, you first off are supposed to source certified organic seed of the variety you want. So if you want to plant Hercules carrots, if there's organic seed that's available, you have to buy the organic seed. That has to be your first choice. If you want to buy Hercules carrots and there isn't certified organic seed in that variety, you can then buy conventionally produced seed as long as it hasn't been treated with any chemicals. So, some seeds like cucumbers, corn, they are coated with a fungicide to prevent fungal growth on them, and you can't buy those seeds. So the first preference is certified organic. Second preference is conventionally produced but no chemicals. GMOs, by definition, are not allowed in organic operations.
And when we talk about treating vegetables with chemicals, if they're not using pesticides, how do they control the pests?
There's both mechanical, there's physical barriers you can set up. So floating row cover, it's a light spun fabric that you can stretch out over a crop that physically excludes the bugs. There are organic controls that inhibit the bugs, so it keeps them away. It actively kills them. There are beneficial controls, so you bring in ladybugs to control for aphids. Once the pest has showed up, there's deeper ways of approaching pest control, which is you set up an environment that is diverse, that is where the plants are healthy. And the plants are better able to resist pests, and you've set up a healthier microsystem.
So in the example you said ladybugs, if you bring ladybugs in to control other pests, do they become a pest? Do they?
No, ladybugs. Ladybugs are no. Most there's most predatory bugs, and then there's pest plant eating bugs. And so ladybugs, I don't know what else they eat besides aphid, but they eat a lot of aphids. So they will. We release them in our greenhouse, for example, when the aphids show up, and they go in and they just work the crop, the leaves, and find all the aphids and eat them, and then they fly out into the world out of the greenhouse windows to look for more prey to eat.
And what are aphids?
Aphids. They are a soft-bodied sucking insect that goes after all kinds of. They go after tomatoes. They go after greens. They go after. They're really a challenging pest.
Okay. And I believe we are almost ready. Are we ready for the next break? Okay.
commons, reclaiming our knowledge of the seed as a commons, reclaiming our duty to the seed as a commons, and reclaiming our rights to the seed as a commons.
Ecological activist and author Dr. Vandana Shiva, Thursday, April 3rd at 9 a.m. on KKFI, right after Democracy Now! Tell somebody.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
In your heart of hearts, perhaps in the place that's hardest to talk about, what do you long for? What is your vision for what we're becoming?
I'm Neil Harvey. It's Heart of Hearts, Women's Leadership in Transforming Culture, this week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right after Between the Lines.
Okay, we are back, and we have our second guest on, and it is Delaney Ellis. And did I pronounce that right?
Yes, Delaney Ellis.
Okay, and Delaney, you're a filmmaker, and you have a film coming to the KC Film Fest next week. And what is the title of that film again?
The title of the film is Ground Operations, Battlefields to Farm Fields. And it champions the returning network of combat veterans who are becoming organic farmers, sustainable ranchers, and artisan food producers.
Okay. And so these, how do you get these people into the program?
Well, it's really not a question of getting anybody into a program. What I did was track what was, to coin a pun, an organically growing movement of people who are deciding for themselves all over the country, men and women, veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, who, for their own reasons, found their way into agriculture, and how this movement, there is a national network called the Farmer Veteran Coalition, and they were my inspiration for the film. And so I sort of tracked, I met them just as they were starting, and I tracked their growth as they, too, were discovering these farmers all around, and ranchers all around the country. And so that's what we're documenting and what we're using the film to support nationally.
Okay. And so this, it's promoting what you're following, it's promoting sustainable agriculture, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the guys and gals coming back themselves, I mean, that wasn't my agenda going out. I was going for veterans in agriculture, but to a person, everyone I met was committed to sustainable, sometimes organic, sometimes biodynamic agriculture.
And do most of these veterans have their own farms on?
No, you know, it's a variety of things. That's the beauty of this. It's so many different styles of farming. You know, there's country farming. There's urban agriculture going on. There's boots in the soil. There's hydroponic and aquaponic. There's all of these artisan foods. One guy became a beekeeper and then started making mead, wine. I mean, it's just very diverse, just as a good farm system should be. So, the thing about the sustainability that I see for the veterans that I've met and talked to is because having just fought the war in Iraq, they really got very clear very quickly on the connection between energy security and food security and national security. And so for them, this is very much continuing their mission of service to the country. You know, only now, instead of in a uniform in a war, it's as our food producers.
Okay, and if farmers or if veterans want to get into one of those programs, what's the steps? What would they do to get into that?
Well, there are a couple ways I might recommend. I mean, you can always, here's a shameless shill, go to our website where we're gathering a lot of resources in the way of veteran farms, sustainable agriculture schools, books, different things like that. There's also, as I mentioned, the Farmer Veteran Coalition. And they're working also. I mean, we're complementary. And so they have a lot of resources available to them. And then there are resources like the recent Farm Bill that passed, finally, has language in it for the first time for veterans, so that they sort of go to the head of the line in various programs, and there is specific stuff for programs and that sort of thing. So they could go to either of our websites, and then from there they would be directed out to a lot of other resources that exist.
Okay. Now, what is your website?
Ours is very simple. It's groundoperations.net.
.net. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Think of us as a network.
And you also mentioned the Farmers Veterans Coalition. What is the
And their website would be farmvetco.org. So that would be farmvetco.org. Okay. And they have a resource guide available that they can send out. They have a number of people there. They have educational programs that they do around the country. They have a fellowship grant program that will make small strategic grants for people getting started. There are government things available. The post 9/11 GI Bill has modifications that make it much easier to use it for on-the-job training and stuff beyond just college. So there's really a lot of resources out there.
Okay, and I want to remind listeners, if you have a question or a comment, you can call in. Studio number is 816-931-5534. Now, when your film comes, what is the date that your film is going to be here in Kansas City?
It's going to be showing at the Film Festival on April 10th.
April 10th, and you know what time that will be?
Oh, boy, I should have had that in my kit bag here, huh? I just got back from 10 days on the East Coast at the D.C. Film Festival, so I don't have that information at my fingertips.
Well, they can go. I know the schedule is posted at kcfilmfest.org. So to see what time that day on April 10th, they can go to that.
And we're going to have a wonderful panel afterwards. We're going to have the editor of Edible Kansas City, who herself is a veteran. So that's another way. You know, you don't always just have to be a farmer to be in the world of agriculture. There are a lot of different ways to be in the food system, you know. So it's good for women. Women, by the way, are one of the fastest rising demographics in farming. So this is for everyone. This is really a family-oriented, family lifestyle business, farming and ranching. So it's a good one for folks who've been in the service and maybe had long deployments and need to re-knit their families, you know, in a healthy, good way. But anyway, so we're going to have her from we're going to have Tamara Marler from Edible Kansas City, and then we're going to have a representative from Cultivate Kansas City, and I believe we're going to have a veteran and myself after the film. So that'll be fun, and we have goodie bags to give away as well. So, yeah, we're going to have a good time. People should come down. It's exciting. It's finding out how these guys and gals are doing really creative, exciting things to bring essentially the family farm to a neighborhood near you.
And if people want to look at a trailer of your film before that date, what would the website be for that?
Same ours. It's on our homepage. That's groundoperations.net.
All right. Okay, and thank you very much for joining us, and I will be there to see your film and meet you, so I look forward to that.
Me too. Come right up and introduce yourself.
Okay,
thank you so much, and come on down to Kansas City Film Festival.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Catherine, just in closing, do you have any closing comments, anything that we didn't touch on yet?
Well, we mentioned briefly Vandana Shiva, Dr. Vandana Shiva, who will be coming to Kansas City. She will be here April 17th, 7 p.m. at the Unity Temple on the Plaza. And if you want information about it, go to our website, cultivatekc.org. She is inspiring both from the specific level of the seed on up to global agriculture and its impact on our individual lives, the lives of our communities, and the lives of our countries. And I hope everybody will come and join us there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And that concludes. Aaron will give you the calendar next.
The Mid-America Environmental Compliance Conference will provide a regional perspective on the RCRA, air and wastewater compliance issues you care about every day, including enforcement and policy regulation changes. The first annual conference will be held April 3rd and 4th at the Overland Park Marriott. April 3rd, 2014. Okay, so I just said that. So the time, it'll be all day at the Marriott. So that's 108th and Metcalf. The 14th annual Kansas City Eat Local and Organic Food Expo is coming Saturday, April 12th, and this one is at Penn Valley Community Center. The one at Johnson County Community Center was just last weekend, so I hope some of our listeners got out to that. The Sierra Club auction is April 12th, 2014 at 6:30 p.m., held at the Lenexa Conference Center, which is located at College Boulevard and Lackman Road. It will feature Jonathan Chester, who is a professional photographer who's been shooting for 30 years pictures of the Antarctic. And on April 27th, Dr. Julie Urbanik, an associate teacher professor of the Department of Geosciences at UMKC, is the author of Placing Animals, An Introduction to the Geography of Human-Animal Relations. She'll be giving a lecture for the Community of Reason at Hague Hall, at UMKC, room 301. That's 1 p.m. on April 27th. And those are the events that I have for you today.
Thank you, Aaron. I will point out, too, later this month I will have on an interview that I have with Dr. Luz Martinez talking about the GMO problem with corn in Calo, Mexico. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. She was here in Kansas City February 24th, and I have that interview with her. So that will be later. Actually, I said this month, but it will be later in April. And thank you for joining us.
All right. Thanks. And the podcast for this program, if you tuned in late, will be up online hopefully sometime tomorrow. You can check it out at kkfi.org. And you can also find podcasts of previous programs. That's kkfi.org. We're going to go with some music now with Brian Cudian, and the name of the tune is Food, right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And if you haven't finished getting your green on across the state at a sister community radio station, KDHX in St. Louis, kdhx.org, their locally produced environmental program, Earthworms, starts at 7 o'clock.
Some drink for the dry in my throat. Need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat. Don't you know it ain't right for people to go hungry with all the food being thrown away just because it ain't the right size or perfect? Because you can't turn a fast dollar that way. You know it ain't right to make people grow coffee when their families could be growing food, working those lands for a corporation. Don't do hungry people no good, 'cause people need food in their belly. Need some drink for the dying their throat, for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat. We got to have food in their belly. Need some drink for the dying. Just to grow a bunch of cheap hamburger meat. You know those trees, they hold the tops on, and those burgers aren't fit.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.